Hi, welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Andrew Kadenek. Joining me is John Purcell and L.S. Hilton, or Lisa Hilton, the author of the book that is going to be blowing up around the world very soon, Maestra. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Hello.
So I want to give context to what this means, but we haven't seen talk like this for a very long time about a book. Within 7 days of your publishers sending this off to their film agents and companies, after being excited about the proof, it's been sold as a movie, which was before the London Book Fair. It has now been sold into over 30 territories. The book is out in a couple of months. You're sitting on all of this. How does it feel right now with the book not out in the marketplace yet?
I think the most surprising thing about that story is that prior to my publisher, Bonnier, picking it up in London, this was a book that I truly could not give away. I'd sent it to my ex-agent, who'd pronounced it disgusting. I'd sent it to my publisher for non-fiction, and I'd offered it to him for no money at all, and he refused to speak to me about it. I couldn't find anyone who wanted to buy this novel. So from being a book that I thought I was going to have to self-publish, rather humiliatingly, online, to 6 weeks later I'm sitting on a plane going to Hollywood, it was absolutely extraordinary. So I haven't really got over the shock of that yet.
And this isn't your first rodeo of sorts. You've published novels before? Is this your first novel?
I know you've published non-fiction. This is my ninth book.
So
I've published 5 biographies, and this will be my 4th novel, but nothing like this has ever happened before. Mm. It's extremely frightening.
I think you've got to get the publisher's praise, disgusting, on the
yeah,
cover.
Yeah, I think disgusting is pretty good, yeah.
That's a good seller. No one gets offended these days. What have you done to offend so many? So how, in writing it, was it something that just was bubbling away in the back of your mind and you thought, or did it just grow organically? How did this book come out?
It's really made of two things. Part of it is a novel that I started years ago and just did about 30 pages of and put to one side. And then part of it came from my former agent asking me if I could have a go at something erotic. And after the failure of my first attempt, I got the old manuscript out and thought, how about if I put these two things together? And I write something about this hapless art assistant in an auction house in London whose hobby is going to sex parties. And I put these two things together. And then I don't quite know when I realised that she had to turn into a sociopath. But she did. So it was a very organic story, although I wrote it in its present form very quickly. It was sort of one summer that I had off from writing history books. I did it then.
Yeah, because the when you talk about the organic growth, I've only read halfway, so don't spoil it for me.
I won't tell you the end.
When I first were introduced to Judith, she's in my mind, she's sort of got the Bridget Jones sort of chick lit kind of feel about her. Mm-hmm. She's a small fish in a big pond, and she's not being treated with the respect that she thinks she deserves. She's got a lot of information in her head. She's done a lot of work. She's done all the right courses. She's highly educated, but she's treated, you know, go off, get coffee here, go that sort of bumbling fool sort of thing. And it is by coatings of varnish, one after the other, that she grows before your eyes into something completely different. It's so deceptive, the way in which. And right now, like, this is one of those things with this book, I have no idea what's coming.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I just arrived in Sydney yesterday, and we had dinner with some booksellers, and 3 of the people there said that they'd been up all night reading the book because they really wanted to guess what happened, and that they were surprised right up to the very end. So, yes, she does start off as perhaps quite a stock character, at least for the first couple of chapters. But you talked about adding coats of varnish. I wonder whether perhaps it isn't more of a stripping away, that as you progress further through the book, you get down to the core of what she is.
That's probably better.
And the core of what Judith Rashleigh is certainly nothing like Bridget Jones. And she doesn't get to marry Mr. Darcy either, sadly.
Well, I'd like to see the onion layers of Bridget Jones taken off to see if we can find that.
I think Bridget Jones, the serial killer, could have.
Well, I can say, I mean, look, I haven't read the copy because there is a hierarchy of Booktopia, and John got the only copy that's in the office at the moment. I will be getting mine soon, I'm assured. But I can tell you that just off mic, we were talking about it, and John was talking about how much he's enjoying it, and Lisa said, realised where John was at and said, you haven't gotten to the good parts yet.
No, the good bit's all in the second half.
Well, you get there's one thing I forgot to mention. Right at the beginning, the opening scene is at some sort of sex party. Mm. So you get this snippet and then it doesn't have anything to do with the next bit at all. So you get it, you're being kind to us and saying, there's more coming. Don't just take this original opening scenes as what it is. And even right from that first go, because it isn't far into it that she meets her friend who is working at a bar where
a hostess bar,
and that's sort of her first the first sense you get that she's flexible morally, and sees the world in a different kind of way. The strength of her is attractive. But I'm just wondering whether or not, because with so many characters not being strong, women, female characters always having something that's gone wrong in their past, and that's why they've done this, and she hasn't had that. She's just, as you mentioned, sociopath. But that strength, do you think there could be a danger there of saying that beware the strong woman?
I was asked to do a piece for GQ magazine about why men find sexually confident women attractive, and I thought, they don't really. They really don't. I think there's a huge tendency in literature to punish women. I think it's extraordinary what you can do to women's bodies in crime fiction. You can inflict all kinds of horrible tortures on them, you can flay them and hang their skins on the washing line, that's just fine. But if you depict a woman who confidently and unapologetically enjoys consensual sex, somehow what you're doing is disgusting. I find that fairly extraordinary. But the book isn't just about sex. It's also got murders and shoes and
art.
It's got art, and it's kind of a thriller. I mean, I hope it's also a book that men will like.
I don't see it at all as
a woman's book. I didn't write it as a woman's book, and I really dislike the sort of gendered classification of fiction that way. This is emphatically not chick lit. It's anti chick lit. Mm-hmm. It's anti 50 Shades of Grey. So I hope that it's a book that that guys will enjoy as well.
It's a very clever book, and also one of the things that Andrew and I discuss when we discuss very successful books, when we look into it. The amount of information that we get for free in our entertainment, the education. That's one of the things that people like to have when they're reading a very exciting book, is that you get these little snippets of, in this you get snippets of art, you get to look inside the life of the extraordinarily wealthy. There's these little bits and pieces that we get as just sort of freebies along the ride of the story, which make, and when we looked at some of the biggest selling titles, I mean, things like Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park, the movie, is just chomp, 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 but the book is just full of information about genes and all this other stuff about paleontology that you sort of pick up. And you don't realise that's a very important part of a really good book.
And I think that's also something we get as children when we read. I mean, exactly what you say about the way that one can absorb information at the same time as being entertained, so that you're absorbing it almost unconsciously. That's what I remember as a child, reading historical fiction or the Willard Price adventure books, all those kinds of things. You learn stuff without knowing that you're learning it.
Yeah.
And actually, I think that's a really really wonderful form of engagement with the book that we often lose as adults. So if you think that this book's done that, wow, that's just fantastic.
It is doing that right now. I love picking up those sort of bits of information within a thriller. But I also like a thriller that develops page by page, and the character is being revealed page by page. And that, for writers, it's a tough thing to do. You have to hold yourself back from really coming out with, this is it, the final bit coming out in one go. Some people can write a sentence and you say, we don't need to write the book now, you've put it in one sentence. Mm-hmm. But you've given us nothing. You just slither by slither as this character develops and the story develops.
Oh, I really want you to get to the end. I want you to be surprised even more.
And I haven't read it, but I think that's really brave because this is something that you've battled to get published in the first place. To keep slowly revealing this character, I haven't read a word of it, so keep in mind I don't know. But that's very brave to do, to not say, look, I'm just going to slap someone in the face from the first time they read it, that you've said, no, this is my vision and I'm going to go with this. That's a strong move to do.
I hope so. I mean, it's certainly different from anything that I'd written before, but I had huge fun writing it. It was really, really fun book to write, and I hope that something of my pleasure in the writing will come across to the readers.
Oh, it's certainly got a fun feel about it as well. I mean, there's a lot of humour in it too.
Well, that's it. I mean, I do see that, you know, sociopathic murderers are not necessarily the obvious source of gags, but I think it's quite funny.
Yeah, there's a lot of humour in it. No, I think that this book has all the potential that your publisher and Alan Unwin in Australia and all the different booksellers that are probably going to get behind you have. I think this is going to be one of those books. And as your publisher was saying earlier, seeing it on a beach, all the red covers being read on the beaches of Sydney, I can envision that, because this is one of those compelling books, and people will want to tell others to get hold of it, to read it. And I've just learned before starting this podcast, there are more. So you're working on
it's going to be three. Yeah. So thank you
very much. Well, you're right. Look, it's a fascinating look, and the next couple of months, I'm very jealous to see where this goes. But thank you so much for giving us your time.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's fantastic. And remember, you can pre-order if you're listening to this. But I assume that this might be, if you're listening to this after pub, this will be quite an intriguing chat. And you can order from booktopia.com.au right now. Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.